You'll get a calendar invite. You'll see it. A presentation and some framing for our conversation today. All right. I think most people are coming on. Yeah, we have a few other people that won't be making it, but I think this is good enough for now. All right. Let me start by sharing my screen. There it is. Okay, so so one of the things that has been happening a lot in the news is this phenomenon of quiet quitting. And at the heart of what's happening, you know, you've got Gallup saying that roughly half the workforce is doing something called quiet quitting. This was accelerated by COVID, but was effectively happening before COVID. Their observation is managers are essential for combating this phenomenon of quiet quitting, which is just people saying, I don't really feel like working for the man anymore. I'm going to go do something else. So Bloomberg, you've got CEOs in a state of fear, wondering, you know, how you're going to combat this. Some people call this the Great Resignation. Soul-crushing dead-end jobs are the reason behind the Great Resignation and quiet quitting trends. So, you know, a little bit of hyperbole here. But the reason that I share this is because to some extent, all of you at one time or another, in order to build and have the team that you most want, you've got to recruit the right kind of people. You've got to retain those people, and you've got to kind of manage them up to maximum performance. So, and this is a really big investment. I mean, this is a huge investment for any business, is their people, not just in money, but often just in time. Your amount, your time spent dealing with and managing people is what's huge. Now, the really important thing to know about this is that people haven't changed, only choices have. And this is good news in one sense, because all of the things that we learn to know about what motivates people and causes them to choose an organization and stay with an organization really haven't changed. What has changed is that people now have the option to do other things. And so companies can't get away with being sort of lazy on this issue. So here's what I mean by this. So the first thing to know and understand about any kind of management and company is that 80% of decisions and behavior in a team are governed by this thing that I call the emotional system. Some of you may have seen this before. So almost all of the stuff that we'll start talking about in this session is really just about how do you then influence this thing called the emotional system. So in a job, in a work, in a company, you have a kind of, I pay you to do work. And this is pretty straightforward. So above the waterline in this iceberg analogy is basically the tasks, the accountabilities, the responsibilities, the things that you pay people that you want them to do. Well, that represents a very, very small part of what is actually governing and guiding those choices. So the emotional system is defined as how I feel about the work I'm doing and how I feel about the people I work with and for. And this drives everything that's happening. So when I'm feeling irritated that my boss disrespected me, that's going to impact how I perform. If I find the task that I'm doing repetitive and pointless, and I don't understand how it actually supports the mission of the organization, I'm going to lose motivation. Now, everything I'm describing is invisible. There, you have no way of knowing this unless you've done what I do, which is I scuba dive in this realm and have for 20 years. It's a murky, chaotic, shark infested, but also very, very magical and beautiful place. And so much of what I do in leadership coaching and management has everything to do with helping leaders get in tune with and understand the subtleties of this system and the levers they can use to influence that system at a new level. And so you might just check in with yourself and ask yourself the question, there's a continuum of leaders that I experience. And on one hand, there are leaders that are very immersed in this emotional system. They tend to be under that water and feel every last ripple and sense it. And they, as a consequence, some of them will have a hard time knowing which way to go, what decision to make. They tend to get into analysis paralysis because there's so many competing stakeholders and agendas and feelings that they're trying to manage for. And then I have others who who live above the water completely. They don't even notice the waves. They kind of have a distant awareness that waves might exist. And they kind of go through life without any conscious awareness of the emotional wake they create. The kind of they walk and turn around and go, I'm not surprised. Why is that person upset? All I said was, let's do this, not that. And now they're all upset, or I didn't even know they were upset. And how come I'm not getting good data here? Why is that not quite working? Well, the reason is because you might not have been in tune with the emotional system. So you can look at yourself and ask yourself the question, which one do I think I am more of than another? And it'll help you begin to calibrate how you'll have to learn to relate. For some of us, we'll have to learn to get up above the emotional system to actually be on the water so you can see. And for others, you'll have to learn to touch the water so that you can actually feel what might be going on in the system that's causing people to make decisions. Now, the second point that's relevant to this, and this is at the heart of what differentiates companies that have no problem attracting and retaining the best people and companies that struggle to get people. And that is to understand that everybody has three jobs. One job they were hired for, the other two they already came with. So the first job that everybody has, they were born with this job, they will have this job until they die, that is to be fulfilled, to find your superpower, to live your purpose, to do something that produces joy in you, that aligns with something inside you. You were given that job the day you were born, and you will have that job until the day you die. And it's not a once and done experience. You're always discovering and uncovering, what is this thing that I'm lit up by, that I want to be a part of, that I want to give my effort, energy, and life force to. Second job we all have is to learn and grow. So these two jobs, from the day you're born till the day you die, you are here to develop, to learn to crawl, walk, run, to learn to speak, to learn to calculate, to all the way up to really, really high level skills that we'll be teaching you in this course. This is a second job that everybody has. And then the third job that everybody has is to perform. We all want ultimately to execute, to be at our highest level, to do what's really great. Now, here's what's really important. That little line there indicates where these jobs live. The first and second job live in the hidden emotional system. And that means that the only job you can really see is that third one, and that's the job you pay people for. So when companies hire people and attract people, those companies that do so with a deep appreciation for and awareness of the first two jobs that any person has, they will get a better performance in that third job. And the reason is pretty simple. If I don't feel very happy about the work I'm doing, how well do you think I'm going to be performing? Some part of that in subtle ways is going to degrade. Equally, if I'm performing really at my absolute best, it's going to be a more fulfilling experience for me. So you can see these things influence and inform one another. If I'm growing, that becomes more fulfilling. As I'm fulfilled, I want to learn to grow more. As I'm growing and learning, I'm going to perform better. And the better I perform, the more I want to learn and get better. And so all of these things are connected and interpenetrating. And so it is a mistake for organizations to effectively strip away the first two jobs and only be thinking about, how do I get that third job running? So beginning to have this fundamental underlying awareness of the emotional system, the need for fulfillment and the need for growth is essential. So I'll just pause there. Any comments or questions before we keep moving? All righty, I'm going to keep hammering away. So what is going on now in kind of corporate world, and when I say corporate, it doesn't just mean big corporation. It can mean an entrepreneurial business. You know, if you've got a team of 20, 10, even five, honestly, in some cases, this can start to happen. The main competition, the main reason for quiet quitting is, of course, this gig economy. The fact that if you're hiring somebody who makes less than $80,000 a year, they have the option, using nothing but their cell phone, to go out and build an income that roughly is equivalent to that. Between $60,000 to $80,000 is what we're finding, is that people can easily go out and just Uber, Lyft, Turo, Airbnb, Upwork, whatever they want. They can have multiple gigs and easily put together about that amount of money, but they don't have to have any of the headaches of working for anybody else. And so what you have are kind of the fundamental human needs, which are like security and belonging, autonomy and empowerment. These aren't the only needs, but these are a few key ones. And then if you're trying to hire people who are not by nature entrepreneurs and who want effectively a job, you're giving them security, like benefits and a predictable paycheck and all that stuff. And you have the opportunity to give them belonging. What they've never had in the history of the world is the opportunity for autonomy and empowerment. And prior to the gig economy, the only way to get that autonomy and empowerment was to go out and start your own business. And that meant huge failure rate, large sums of money that had to be invested, possibly fundraising. Very few people had the wherewithal to be able to do that. And so they chose to work for companies. Now they literally open their phone. They have all of the assets they need already paid for in their own pocket, and they can execute. So what I'm observing right now, and this stuff changes over time, is that autonomy and empowerment, really post-COVID, became way more exciting to people than security and belonging. Now, there's always going to be people that need security and belonging, but autonomy and empowerment really started to take the forefront. And what that means is your job, if you run a team, and you, even if you have a team and you think that team is great, you still need to be thinking about how to keep that team. If you don't have the team, you don't have the right players, you're going to be thinking about how do I attract them? And here are the key underlying things. Security is straightforward. You don't need any help with that. But the real big thing here is you can leverage your belonging, the power of belonging. And that just means connection. You have the ability to create an organization, a community that people want to belong to, that identify with that community. You can't do that just by hiring people. It doesn't automatically happen. So there's a dozen of ways to do this throughout this program. We can look at this. Module one, if you're curious and you want to go deeper, module one is going to show you exactly how to create that belonging community. And so I'm going to skip through some of these so that I can get to some coaching. Let's talk about autonomy. Autonomy is all about freedom. So choice is how people experience freedom. And I'll give you one really simple example of how you can introduce micro choice. And by the way, this is also found in the change management video, which is at the end of module one. I go a lot deeper there, but here's the basic premise. You want to be looking for where are the places in my employee's life that they can feel the freedom to choose something. Because in the corporate world, most everything that happens is like, it's decided from the top, we're going this way, deal with it. And if you don't like it, tough luck, because I employ you and you do what I say because I pay you. That sort of command and control is the thing that causes people to go, you know what, the gig economy seems a lot more fun, a lot more interesting. Maybe I'm going to go try that. So what you do is you create micro choices. Here's a simple example of a micro choice. I even do it when I'm helping people fire people. So a micro choice that works in a firing situation is, hey, you have an option. You can either take 2 weeks severance, leave when you're ready, or you can stick around for 30, 40 days. We'll pay you for those 30, 40 days. It's easier to find a job when you have a job. We'll serve as a referral in these areas that we really trust and respect you. And your job is to go out and find new work and to transition institutional memory and knowledge back into the organization. Choice is yours. Now, the reality is they're getting fired either way. This is a really traumatic event for them. But what I found over and over and over again is when people are faced with a choice, they experience that sense of dignity. They experience just a tiny bit of freedom. So that's just one example. There's tons of other examples I'll get into in other modules, but mostly I'm just trying to highlight some of these things. So you might just ask yourself two questions. One, what fear or belief keeps me from giving my employees choices? There may be really valid fears. You may have really valid beliefs, or they may be illusions. So it's worth just investigating that. And the second is, what local experiment could I try that might allow for this? And this is a really important part of organizational life. Really validating what I'll call local experiments. So instead of saying, okay, organization-wide, this is what we're going to be doing henceforth, you might say there's one little department we have, or there's a couple of people that work over here that I want to experiment with a new way of doing this that infuses greater autonomy, greater empowerment, more sense of connectivity. So that I can compete as an organization, so I can compete against the emerging economy that is starting to make it hard for me to keep people. So local experiments, make sure you give yourself permission to think more creatively and broadly, knowing you can always revoke them. That's why we call them experiments. That's why we call them local, which means it's not a company-wide thing. And just that simple frame, when you talk to others, you go, yeah, we're doing a local experiment. People are like, oh, okay, it's an experiment. We'll try it. We'll see how it goes. It sets proper expectations. And then the last one is just empowerment. This is all about trust. So the most important question I know, and empowerment really is, again, these underlying feelings that I'm trying to help us see, connection, freedom, trust. These are the feelings that create the kind of magnetism of a company environment. This is the stuff that people will say, I got to be a part of this. I want to stay with this. And I want to tell others to come and be a part of this. That's what you need in order to build this kind of an organization. So empowerment's a tricky game, right? Because lots of people want it, and a lot of people haven't earned it, don't have the right to it. They don't even know how to manage it. And so there are a couple of questions I'm going to ask you to ask yourself. Number one, who is someone you need to empower on your team? What prevents you from giving them more power? And what do you need from them to do this for them? And when you have clarity around this, you can start to have conversations with people that begin to hand them more power. And so even just the promise that you intend to give them more empowerment is enough to begin to infuse in the system a culture of empowerment. Even just the starting conversation that says, hey, I want you to have more of this. Here's what I need from you in order to get that. And now you have a conversation where people are going to start working in tandem with each other. So that's sort of just the framing that I wanted to give you today so that we can start whatever conversation we need to have. My interest here is I'm happy to provide coaching on whatever it is that you're facing. If you want to engage with the material I just presented, we can engage with that. But if you have something else that is unrelated to that, this is your opportunity for me to kind of figure out where you are on the map and how I can get you to the next steps. So who's got comments, questions, or coaching questions?
I'll start. Nobody else is ready. I want to go back to some of the things on there. The micro, oh, wait a minute. Let me see.
Micro choice.
Yeah. No, we talked about the performance and the very first thing, the to be fulfilled and learn and grow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess let me see if I can. I operate above the above that line, as you talked about in your example. The question is, we encourage that through conversation. I invest in books and personal development stuff for anybody that's ready, willing, and able, quickly and often. Oh, what are you reading now? I'd love to read that. We do that. We're always encouraging some form of growth, but that takes a fair amount of internal initiative. And so the question is, it sounds good. How do you get that installed in your team, in your individuals?
Yeah, great question. So the first thing is, you know, most of these things happen through conversation. And what I encourage is structured conversation. So you would install as part of your work life together at a certain cadence that feels appropriate. So it could be, this is a quarterly one-on-one meeting you have with people. It's certainly the conversation you have with people when you hire them. And what you're doing is you're asking them the question, what is giving you the most life right now in this work? You know, just even saying to them, I acknowledge you have a purpose bigger than this company. And I acknowledge that you have a responsibility to fulfill that purpose. I acknowledge that you want to grow and learn beyond working in this company. But I want you to know that I think that can happen here. And I believe that when I care about those other parts of your life, it will improve your performance here. So the conversation I want to have with you is, what is lighting you up most about your work here? Because that's a good indicator of what your sense of purpose is now for in this context. Two, what's something you think you're learning that's really exciting to you? And second, what would you most like to learn next? And what that does is it sets up an agenda for conversations like this. And you'd say, look, in 3 months, I'm going to sit you down and ask you the same three questions. And you can structure those questions differently. But each time, I also recommend you share your interaction with that. So you would start by saying, hey, your sense of purpose in the world, my sense of purpose in the world matters. So let me share you kind of where I am right now with my own sense of purpose. I love creating. I love building. I'm an entrepreneur by nature, and I just get lit up by the idea of taking an idea to execution. I think that's amazing. Two, what I'm learning right now is that I'm encountering my own limits as a leader, and I'm learning where I should push and where I should accept. And number three, what I want to learn is I want to learn how to be a leader at that next level. I think there's like some tricks or tools up there that I don't actually know about, and I want to learn that. So that's where I am. Tell me where you are. And you do that with your direct reports. Then you ask them to do it with their direct reports. And all you do is, like on a quarterly basis, you just acknowledge that. You for sure do that in onboarding new employee orientation. You know, that's one of the first things you do is you tell the story of who you are, why you started this company, what is important to you, what you're learning. When you start talking about that human stuff, you start to activate these incredibly powerful levers that create magnetic businesses that are not just here to get work done. And what happens is it's catalytic. It starts to impact, hey, performance. I'm starting to perform more. This guy cares about what I care about. This guy cares about me as a person. So all of that is how you start to instantiate it in the organization. So I would say you could do that quarterly. And there's I'm trying to remember where it is in the trainings. I think it's module four, near the very end of module four is something called the zipper conversation. And this is something you can do monthly, which is like slightly more specific. So that's like 40,000 feet, big picture. You can also shrink it down a little bit and have a conversation. I call it a zipper conversation because it's like aligning you. You know, locks you in like a zipper and you get similar. And it's a series of alternating questions. So it's like, hey, here's how I see who you are and what you're doing fitting into the overall picture of the organization. And here's what I'm excited about you, what you're bringing. And here are some things that I want you to be focused on. But now I want to hear from you. What do you see as your role in this big picture of the organization? What kinds of things are you most proud of? What are the things that you want to acknowledge that you've achieved? And what are the things you want to shift and work on and grow in? So that's another way to do a zipper conversation where you're actually getting them to celebrate the things that they've done really well, which is super rare. You never get to have that in a corporate environment where your boss says, hey, tell me the things you're winning at. I think you're winning here, but tell me what you think you're winning at. I'd like to hear that. And then they kind of go, wow, you know, I guess you're right. I hadn't thought about it. I'm feeling pretty good about X. I'm feeling pretty good about Y. And all you're doing is you're surfacing conversations that don't happen. And I'll reiterate this again and again throughout the program. Problems only exist when a conversation goes missing or a conversation goes wrong. So whatever it is you're needing to build, the very next thing you want to ask is, I want that. What conversation needs to happen in what container, at what frequency for this to be part of organizational life? Because what you don't want to have happen is you're at the top and you always have to be managing this and pushing this down and like reminding everybody. You want to create rituals that are a natural part of the working life of the organization. And so you go, hey, everybody, it's time to have your zipper conversations ready, go. And you've already trained them in it. You've got a little module you can... they can review if they need to learn how to do it. Those are the kinds of things that take almost no time and are incredibly impactful. So I'll just pause there. Comments, pushback, thoughts on that?
No, I think, I mean, just so you're talking, I think what I recognize is we do this pretty well with the management team. We have a quarterly meeting. We talk beyond, you know, what we're doing as a company. What are you doing personally? You know, not as touchy-feely as kind of how deep you take it. And maybe there's some of that that needs to happen. But we're really not having that conversation at, call it an entry level. And that's where we're having the biggest challenges.
So, your entry level is where they have to have it. And the other thing you have to have at entry level is you have to have links between their daily tasks, which are probably repetitive and boring, and how they link to company mission and purpose. So that I know when I show up in the morning and I'm pressing this button, I know how it's pushing that thing that I believe in forward.
Right.
And there's a method to that. There's a method to that. And we can get into the techniques of that later, but that's definitely something that you want to be thinking hard about. And for sure, if you're doing entry level, lower level, under 60 grand a year, then this stuff is even more important. You personally aren't going to be motivated by most of this stuff because you're an entrepreneur. And so you're like, I'm motivated by my own inner drive and I don't need a lot of external help to figure that out. But the people that want to work for you are usually not entrepreneurs. If they were, they'd go work for somebody else, or they'd go work for themselves, really. So the people that are signing up for your job are people that have a W-2 mentality, and they're looking for you to set up structures that create the meaning so that they go, good, I have everything I need here. Why would I go look for something somewhere else? And a paycheck isn't going to cut it. Not anymore.
Right. Got it. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Helpful.
Other comments or questions about this or anything else you're struggling with?
Shane, I'll jump in. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thank you for opening up this conversation. I had two questions, but I'll do one and then I'll pause and come back. Let's just make sure there's time for everybody else. On the last screen that you had, when you were talking about trust, who's somebody you need to empower, what prevents it? What are your thoughts about part-time employees being challenged with those things versus like full-time salaried employees? And my question stems from the fact that I've got everybody from management and leadership who are all but equity owners, you know, like just they're playing all out. They believe in the vision. They work longer hours than they should. I've got near full-time, but they're technically hourly people that are on W-2, still employee. We treat them as employees. And then I've got contractors and vendors, more part-time. So what I tend to do is for people who are full-time, I actually give them ownerships. And that's more of like an embracing the delegation. Like, okay, well, you're accountable to this. But I don't give ownerships to part-time people because I don't feel that's really warranted. I'm curious on if your framework applies to that methodology or if you actually disagree with that completely and you would rethink how I can possibly empower everybody from the person who works 5 hours a week to the person who works 45.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about two different things. One is how to empower people and the other is how to incentivize people, right? I mean, you're linking certain behaviors are incentivized in certain ways when you're a full-time kind of part of the business versus when you're part-time versus if you're just a vendor or a partner, that's kind of right. Pretty external. So there's a whole lot of body of knowledge around how you do incentives and all that stuff. And there are a few basic rules around that. I'm sure you've got that pretty well handled. The stuff you're asking about, which is how do I make sure that these part-time, I'm assuming lower pay people, like what kind of pay scale are you paying that bandwidth?
Let's say fair pay. No, nobody's under what they should be paid. Like whether you're at,
what's the band of salary, so to speak, even if they're part-time, are they making 20 grand a year working for your company? Are they making 50 grand a year working for their company? I'm just trying to understand what the.
For sure. Let's say they're probably 40 and below based off of the task. So it's relative to whatever their hourly rate is. But a lot of it, let's consider it more Mechanical Turk type of team. So I have like 14 copywriters. One of them is a lead copywriter. He's salary. Everybody else is hourly employees or contractors. So like could this framework apply to that, and should it? I think is kind of where I'm going with it.
I think it can. I think when you're talking about a part-time person who I'm assuming is employed by several other kinds of agencies like yours, is that why they're part-time? Like they're
some are, some aren't. Yeah, I mean, I got a big variety pack because I have a pretty expansive team, a lot of which are contractors and such. And I have a leadership team of four, not including RT. And then I've got, inclusive of that, 10 salaried employees. Everybody else is either hourly contractor or hourly employee. And if you include vendors and everything, the roster is like over 50. So I manage a lot of different dynamics of like who's contributing. And I'm trying to get better at finding those opportunities to be able to exactly do that last screen that you had. I'm wondering if I should, because when you said like somebody new, it's really important to, you should actually consider exactly what Mark was mentioning early on. That was new information to me. So I'm wondering if this is also a different way to approach it.
Yeah, all super important questions. Sorry, I just want to keep digging.
No,
so
please.
I'm not getting it the wrong way. So next question is, is there anything you're not getting from this class of people in your organization that you wish you had more of? For example, I can't seem to get people to stick around long enough, or I'm not getting them to hit deadlines, or actually they're functioning fine. I'm not unhappy with it. I'm just trying to be proactive.
Probably more the third. Yeah. I mean, we have very low turnover. Everybody, when they fill out surveys, they're really happy working with the company, but I'm looking for opportunities to get on top of it. Be proactive, not reactive.
Yeah. So I would say, do you have another burning platform in your business that's related to kind of leadership management structures?
When you say burning,
burning platform is like the urgent thing that isn't working right.
No, this was more of I wanted to see how that last screen, I could actually apply it. That was more the ethos behind that question. Yeah.
That's great. The only reason I'm asking is I just want to make sure that I'm directing your time and energy the right way, right? Like if it's not broken, the good news is you don't have to spend a lot of time and effort trying to fix it, because they are getting their needs met in your organization. Those underlying needs they care about. Probably they have tons of autonomy. They've got lots of empowerment to write what they want to write without having to, in the case of a copywriter, for example. They've got a lot of that kind of creative empowerment. In general, I find that in the creative space, whenever you're dealing with creatives, the best thing you can do for them is create time and space. That is the thing that a lot of people mistake when they try to manage creatives, is that they try to create management structures and create connective tissue, which ultimately works against the creative process. So there's a little bit of an exception. I'll give you one story. Herman Miller, you guys all know who Herman Miller is. You know what this is? Famous furniture manufacturing company. Well, the chairman of that company did something really brilliant at one point. Herman Miller was really innovative in the 60s. And then like in the 80s and 90s, they started like losing their edge. And so this guy came in and basically fired all of the designers for Herman Miller, fired every single one, and rehired them all as contract workers. And he said, you're going to get the same pay, same benefits and salary, but you can work from anywhere you want in the world. You have no meeting responsibilities, no budget responsibilities. You don't have to show up to any of the company culture things. Your only task is to deliver this many designs to our company each year. That's it. Just a certain number of designs that we need each year. And their design creativity went off the charts. So there is a slight distinction I would make between like, I've got a bunch of fairly low wage workers doing tasks that aren't that interesting to them versus I've got creatives that are really loving this creative exercise. Those are two different kind of management challenges. So I would say for you, part of the reason you're not having problems is because they're creatives and they're treated almost like with that freedom, I'm assuming. So that would be my suggestion, is continue to give them that latitude, that freedom. And as long as you're getting the output you want, you should be super happy.
That's helpful, man. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Good. Other questions, comments, observations?
Yeah, I have one quick question, Shane.
Yeah.
How hard is it to implement these talks as far as talking with our manager and our manager having these talks with people who report to her. How hard is it to implement it if you've never done it?
Not hard at all. Not hard at all. You always start at the top and you give it time. So what will happen is the way that you train somebody to do this is you do it to them. So you take your direct reports and you regularly do this thing several times, however long that takes. If it takes 6 months, it takes 6 months. But you get into this rhythm where they're starting to experience, oh, that's what's going on. Okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to get asked this question. I got to be thinking about what my answers are. And when you reflect on these questions, you create new realities. You know, I gave you guys a couple of prompts at the beginning of this presentation where I was like, who do you need to empower? What belief is preventing it? What do you need from them? These are not questions you're sitting asking yourself without the prompt. And when you get asked that question, you will create something new. And so that's what's possible when you're asking these questions. You're either creating a new relationship, you're creating a new connection to the daily tasks they're doing and how that connects to their purpose. As you do that, you then turn and say to them, hey, you know how we've been having these meetings? It's time for you to have those meetings with your people. Do you have any questions about how I facilitate this? And then they'll ask, they'll tell you. And if they don't have questions about how to facilitate it, hey, Rhea, then what you do is you simply set them loose and you remind them periodically. You need to say like, hey, everybody, it's time to have your quarterly purpose conversation or whatever you want to call it. And all you're doing is you just continue to activate in people this small task they're doing with this overarching mission. So for example, my company's purpose, my why, which if you're looking for a why and you don't have a why either for you personally or for your company, this is what all of module one, not all, a lot of module one will show you exactly how to create that in a company, especially if you want to create one that's more indigenous, which is way more powerful. But that's a side note. The main thing is this. My company's purpose is we exist to cultivate the highest potential in leaders so they can grow organizations that are good for people in the world. And we mean grow in every sense of that word, right? So that's our big purpose. Well, I have to hire, let's say, an appointment setter. An appointment setter is somebody who calls all the leads who gave me a phone number but didn't schedule a call. That's an incredibly tedious, terrible job. You know, to sit down and they're commission only and they're like, I got to motivate myself to sit down and dial all these numbers and get told, why are you calling me? I don't want to talk to you. And finally, somebody's like, yeah, okay, I'll talk to you a little bit. And all that, right? It's a really, really hard job. And so each time I'm talking with that person, I'm amplifying, I'm connecting to the fact that they joined my company because they wanted to make a difference. And I have to help them understand every time you get somebody on that call, you have a potential just by asking one question. Forget if they ever buy anything. Don't try to sell them anything. Your only job on that call is to ask one question that causes them to think a little differently, that can make their life and day better, that can make their business better, that can make their leadership better. Your job is that. So instead of I'm an appointment setter and my job is to get people on a call with Shane or a sales guy, my job is to bring value every time I talk to somebody. And it changed the way that appointment setter showed up and it changed how excited they were to be there. So anyway, that's an example of how you link that super tedious task of, I have all the onboarding materials of you need to sit down, dial this number. I need this many dials. You need to put this number in this spreadsheet so that I can track the dashboard to know what your conversion rate is and blah, blah, blah. That's all the basic training. But after you got the basic training, then it's this, you know, periodic, not every day, not all the time, but periodically, you're just reminding yourself to have these conversations. And if you're not the one talking to the direct kind of like tedious people, then you got to be training the people below you to know how to have those conversations. And you do it by modeling. Does that help?
It does help. Thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Brett, Shane, I got a question just to kind of build off of that one. Earlier, I heard you say something, I think it was a Zipper conversation, and it was in module something. And I'm assuming that that's some type of layout in a series of questions or a series of kind of how you just said, how you lay out these conversations and whether you do them monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, whatever that may be. where is that module, or how would you see that if you know,
I'm looking for it
that myself or one the best thing is want to implement?
Yeah, the best thing is for me to just tell you where it is instead of tell you to go look. I'm in my in the program right now. Let me just pull it up and tell you exactly where to find it.
Because that's, I mean, we've always done like annual reviews, and then it's kind of like a as needed, as shit breaks, you kind of fix it. But you know, it takes time and effort to set these up. But if it makes a big difference, I'm sure it's well worth it.
It absolutely makes a difference. And by the way, to be really clear, this stuff shouldn't take lots of time and effort. It really doesn't need to take lots of time and effort. So we're in module 4, double productivity and impact. There's a bunch of stuff in here, but the thing I'm referring to is video 13, the zipper conversation. And then there's just a little, I explain it a bit more in that video. And then if you open this, it just talks about here's how it works. Here's the questions you can ask in a given order. I'm not even saying these are the exact questions you have to ask. I'm just giving you examples. In fact, I'm pretty sure the questions I did on this call are a little different than the ones that are written here. And that's because they're kind of doing something slightly different. And so that's the technique. That's where you find it. Video 13, module 4. And it should be pretty straightforward. Does that help?
Perfect.
Awesome.
Okay. Shane, so question on that one. Sorry, Mark. I just want to get a clarification here. Is the zipper strategy something that you use anytime, or is it something that you use more for, like, say, semi-annual reviews? Is it just a strategy, or do you use it more formally? Because I'm about to do big reviews with my whole team. So would you suggest using that strategy or something different?
Yeah. So in general, I think I'm a much bigger fan of and a believer in, I know annual reviews are kind of a necessary component of performance management and all that stuff, but an annual review should feel really, really uneventful to people. It should feel as if you're merely memorializing all the conversations you've already been having. And so this is what your aim is to create a feedback rich culture. So in addition to, I want to have meaning and I want to have autonomy and I want to have empowerment and all these things that human beings like and need. The other thing human beings love is clarity. They love to know what we're aiming at, how to get there, and where I stand relative to that thing. And so providing that clarity can happen in these conversations. So I would set these conversations up, maybe starting out monthly. If it feels like it's just too much, then consider adjusting the questions so that it's more appropriate to a monthly cycle. Like those big, what's my purpose? What am I learning questions? I think are more every 6 months, maybe. Like, how is your purpose showing up here? Are you alive and active? Are you still, you know, excited to get out of bed in the morning? If their answer is no, ask them, what's standing in the way? What is it that's keeping you from getting more excited? Those kinds of questions. Here's what's happening to me. So self-revelation and invitation to share is going to help that process. And I do that at that big level less frequently. The zipper conversation, I think, is a bit more like a monthly to bi-monthly conversation where you're really just trying to keep alignment happening, right? So there's that getting people to pull in the same direction at the same time does not have to be complicated if you have a structured container in which you're going to have the alignment conversation. The zipper conversation is designed for alignment. Now you can take those questions that I write there and you can adjust them to your context, or you can say, I need something more specific here. That's fine. The details of those questions is less critical than the emotional process created in having the conversations on a fairly predictable basis. So that by the time you get to an annual review, you've already had the conversation 10 times, you know, over the course of a year. And you're like, it's all the stuff we've already talked about here. That's the goal. If an annual performance review is like shocking to somebody, it just means you've got a lot of missing conversations. That's all.
Cool. That's great perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
I was going to comment, if you don't mind, I'll share my experience, because we installed kind of a cadence of these quarterly conversations. And if it's helpful, I wouldn't mind sharing it so you guys, because we've tried 100 different things and what happens is they fall off. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what we did about 5 quarters ago is started the OKRs, objective key results. In every quarter, first, I made everybody write them down and I published them to everybody, all the management team. And then we had a meeting and that was it. So going back to how do you get started? Believe me, it was one of those things that everybody thought was really stupid, right? It was, you know, so it's like, do we punt or not? But we immediately scheduled the next quarter. And since they were published, everybody, I said, the idea of this is you get to see my OKRs and let's make them simple. We don't need hundreds of goals and task list stuff. It's basically, what are you trying to accomplish for yourself over this next quarter? Anyway, I'm sharing that because it was difficult in the beginning. We just finished our fifth quarter and everybody was ready. They had, you know, so it is just, all it does is I say it's allowing you to take a minute out of your busy day, putting out all the fires and say, what are you really trying to accomplish? So I'm going to install. The point of it is that you do it, the more you do it and it's scheduled, the better it gets and the more you get out. So
anyway, yeah, absolutely.
I share that.
I like that. I got a question for you, Mark. So as far as if you've tried a lot of different things and it's one thing to, you know, to set these times to schedule them, is there a specific program or tool that you like to use as far as documentation then?
So we use, at first we started with just a general document like Outlook, right?
Yeah.
We use a product called Asana. I don't know if you guys
might know.
Project management, but you can use it for a lot of other stuff. So what happens is if it's in Asana, that's what I tell them. Don't email me because I won't see it. Put it in Asana if they need me to do something because I'd rather live there than in Outlook or whatever. So we use Asana to answer your question. But what happens with that, it's a tickler file. They know it's coming. So, and I'll even say in our weekly meeting, okay, OKRs are coming up at the end of the month, the third quarter, because we're always focused on quarter production. So what's coming next? So that's, I use it in Asana and then we don't even use a document anymore. I just list it in there. And so if you know how to use Asana, it's got a description of what you can do. And that way everybody has access to it. So I know what HR, they know what mine are. And we do three business, three personal. So, you know, if somebody's trying to become better at golf, you know, whatever. Yeah, you know, we allow that. So that's been helpful. But I'm going to incorporate some of this. I just wanted to share that because, you know, it's hard to get started with this stuff. And it's.
Mark, that's awesome. Thank you for that input. I'll just suggest one thing you guys can look at is something called Lattice, lattice.com. I think it's a software. And it is designed for performance management that you can just determine the kind of intervals of how often. So sometimes people literally use it for like monthly kinds of check-in conversations. Sometimes people use them quarterly, sometimes annually. But there's a lot of flexibility in how you can do that. And there are other softwares like it. So if you don't like that one, you can look at others, tons of competing softwares. But Lattice is one I know of and know companies that like it and use it. The other thing that we're going to do is, as you guys are thinking, you're going to get ideas from these conversations, both from me and from other leaders, and you're going to want to go implement them and execute them. And Mark, you've just alluded to one of the most important things about implementing ideas, which is at first it's hard. And so one of the things that I'm going to do next week is I'm going to introduce you to the most powerful change management process I've ever used. It's one I developed and I've used it to lead change management in teams as small as 5 and as big as 20,000. And so what happens is change management by nature is pain management. Nobody likes change. Nobody wants change. And even small change, they don't want. So you should know resistance is built in. And what I'll do is next week, I'm going to teach you the exact process. And if you want a preview on that, you're welcome to, I'm going to take you through it more deeply, but if you want to go ahead, oh, what happened to my program? I had it up here. Let me get it up. It's in module one. It's the second to last video in module one. And it's called Staging the Ascent. So I will present a scaled down version of that video on our next call. And then we'll talk about as you're planning changes, as you're planning to make changes to how you lead and manage, remember this process because it's going to make a huge difference in aligning people. And so we'll get into that next week also. Okay, what else? Can you all give me just a second? Alrighty, I'm back. What else is going on? Other comments or questions as it relates to your business?
Shane, I'm good for today. Looking forward to the next sessions. I got to jump here on the hour, but it was super timely because I'm about to do a lot of these reviews. So you gave me some good things to think about. So I appreciate it, man. I'll see you next week.
I'm going to give you one last thing before you go.
Yeah.
Whenever you're writing performance evaluations, what you're really doing is playing almost entirely in the emotional system. And the way the emotional system works is it fixates on the negative. So whatever negative thing you write and put in writing, make sure you put it in a really gentle way in writing, and then be verbal, use your language to emphasize, intensify, and ratchet up that difficult negative feedback, if there is any. So the kind of softer you can be in writing, the better, and here's why. Because when you're talking about, hey, you're not doing this well and it's really causing these problems, that's a temporary reality. It's a dynamic thing that's changing. It's going to change. When you fix it in space and time, people tend to fixate on it and it decreases morale. So it's not to say you shouldn't be hard, clear, and direct. You should be. Just in writing, you want to be gentle and a little more indirect. And then verbally, you can just speak to it more directly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. My plan of attack for this was actually going to be having people list out things that they're liking doing, things they're not liking doing, what they really want to get to. And I'm going to infuse some of the points that you put in here. And I want to listen more than anything for like this first round, and then have that space with my leadership team to gather the data and then maybe come back for another. Because I'm planning on just listening and just listening to her, figuring out where we are. So that's really good where there is some negative constructive feedback. I'll keep that in mind.
And you will need to have that. You know, that it just sort of listening is really important. But at the end of the day, what people want is clarity. And you giving them that truthful feedback is how they feel clear, even if they don't like it. So that'll be an important stage that it sounds like you've got listed. So that's awesome.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Thanks, man. Have a good one, Jim. All right. Anybody else want to dig in on something?
Yeah, I haven't. I need to get through some of these courses. This is all brand new to me. So, I mean, I kind of like the group setting because I can hear what's going on with other groups to get some ideas and, try to identify new ways of going about it. But I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more questions as we go down with your training modules.
Yeah, as you get into it, you'll hopefully bring those questions each time. And especially, I just want to speak, Mark, because you've given me a pretty specific thing that you're working through. An exercise I want you to do is, I'm going to show it to you really quick because I think this is relevant right now. Let me go to the modules here. And let me get... So I think one of the big things for you, Mark, is you're a CEO, a COO, and a CFO of a, you know, multi 8-figure business. And that's just simply too much stuff for you to be handling and managing. And so what I'd like for you to do is watch module 4.
Okay.
Videos 1, 2, 3, and where did the other one go? Yeah, just for now, those three videos. And I would like for you to begin identifying key roles that you currently play that you know you don't need to play. So this is module 4 is double productivity and impact. And I want you to start thinking about structure. And we're going to have our, one of the conversations I want to have come up next week maybe is whatever you generate, I want to see this. And it'll be helpful for others to see this as well. Okay. How you create a structure, understanding the rules of the game, there's a body of knowledge around how to create smart structure in organizations. You're going to get clear on that structure by using something that is a roles, using roles instead of job descriptions. So let me explain what I mean by that. A job description is, here's a person, they occupy this set of things. It is often more helpful to effectively remove the person from the situation, including you, so you're totally agnostic, and you define small roles that are almost like apps on a phone that you can move around and decide where you want them to go. So a job description becomes a basket of roles, could be 20 roles. And this module has this, I'll just open this and show it to you so you can see it. This is just an example of how it worked when I was a chief leadership officer of a real estate development company. I reported to a CEO and I was helping them do this exercise. So I did it on me first, and then we did it with others to help determine if we needed a COO or if we needed a director of ops or if we needed someone who was more this, not that, asset management. And so here's what it looked like. And I won't spend too much time on this, but I just want you to see what it looks like to get your creative juices flowing to see if you want to do this. So one is, I was the vision and values steward. That's a role that any human could occupy. It occupied a grand total of, 3% of my time. And the purpose was to articulate and initiate vision and value statements for the company, as well as new product sectors, categories, and offerings. The accountabilities, interview stakeholders, articulate non-financial performance and beliefs, ask and help answer the question, why is this our business? So this was a really high level thing that usually is occupied by a CEO, but this CEO was like, this isn't my skill. I don't really know how to do this. I don't like doing it. I don't want to do it. So I started doing it, but it's a role that he could easily take off my plate at any time without removing me from a job. He's just like, that role we're going to put over here now. I'm also an executive coach. It has a purpose. It has accountabilities that can be traded out. I was a human development architect. I was planning how we're going to do human development, which was part of his mission at this real estate development company. I'm also a trainer for that program. You could trade that out. So I could still be architecting, but they want to hire external trainers and so on and so forth. And so this example is in this and you can see exactly how it's worded. So the point is not to get exhaustive on everything you can imagine. The point is just to sort of begin to define for you and think agnostically about what are all these various things that I'm doing and roles that I'm occupying that I don't have to and I don't want to anymore. And put those roles that you don't really care about or want to manage or deal with anymore in a bucket. And then we can see what kind of person might need to be occupying this. What kinds of things need to be automated? What kinds of things need to be delegated? And could this be multiple people? Or is it one low-level person? Or is it one really high-level person? All of those are the things that you can then start talking. But that's the sequence by how you have structured conversations. You start agnostically. You create really simple, small roles. And then you decide who and how that's going to get filled. Now, you may have already known all this stuff, but I just wanted you to have where to go find it if you wanted to do this. Make sense?
That'd be helpful. It's a question of organizing it, really. I mean, it's all right here, but it's more like what needs to get done. Let's go do it.
So, and I would say this template is something you can just imitate. Yeah, you can easily plug these things in. And I would say find aspirational sounding titles for each role.
I was just going to say, I don't know if I'd be that creative.
So what you can do is come and show me what you've got. Yeah. And this can then fund and populate a job description, which is part of what makes a job attractive.
Yeah.
So. All right. So that was just for everybody, Marcus.
Yeah, where was that, Shane?
That was module 4, videos 1, 2, and 3 around designing structure. And I want you to watch all three of them because they provide proper context. You don't have to execute everything in there, but to start just the roles is what I want. You to collect for the roles you no longer want to be playing. And then that informs a recruiter and they can go execute on that.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what came up when we were talking through that, is not the ones I don't want to do, the ones I can let somebody do. So maybe it's, you know, and it goes back to potential, you know, control issue. You know, it's some of it's like, I could never let that one go. And I hate doing it.
Yeah. So give me an example of one of those, if that's okay.
Managing cash flow.
Okay. And you could never let that go.
Not at this stage anyway.
Okay, good.
Don't get me wrong. That will be very difficult to get my hands out of it.
Okay.
Now I could get, I can do it as long as somebody, it's complicated. It gets complicated because there's several different entities, and until that knowledge ownership is there, I it'd be tough to let it go. My point being is the first thing that came up is I don't want to do all this stuff, but who do I got that can do it, that has the capabilities or at least the smarts enough to know if they screw up how to fix it?
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. So I think it'd be good for you to kind of put three categories together. One is the roles you love and you're good at and you're going to keep doing. The other are the roles that you can't fathom giving up, but you really don't enjoy. And the other ones, which are, you don't really need to do them. Even if you enjoy them, you need to give them up. Or you don't enjoy them, you need to give them up. So those are the three categories. Okay. And the reason that's so important is I'm going to help you start thinking about skating to where the puck is going to be, not where the puck is. I want you to be thinking about, imagine a world where there is a person that exists that has that capability and you can hand that to them. I'm not saying we're hiring anybody right now. I just want your mind to start broadening and dreaming more about what do I need in order to get this done rather than what do I have that can do this already.
Right.
You have the ability to go out and grow the thing, and you're going to have to. So you know that already. I'm just giving you, again, frameworks to start having these conversations so we can move the needle for you.
I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Normally I go like an hour and a half. We got a smaller group today, so we can go shorter, but I also have to catch a flight in about 5 minutes. So I'm happy to entertain any other comments or questions next 5 minutes. Any closing comments?
No, but seems interesting. It's, you know, and typically when you have these types of conversations, everybody kind of has the same problems where it's, you know, it's effort, accountability, and basic like SOPs of how you are going to run your organization. And the back end stuff is the hard part to get going. But once you get it going, it makes everything so much easier. So it's going to be fun to go through this. I think it's kind of like one of those things, you know it, you know you should be doing it, you know you need to be doing a better job of it, but you still don't get out of your own way. So it'll be fun to kind of go through and go through these various modules.
And for each of you, I'm glad to hear that. Thanks, Brett. I'm excited to have you along for this. For each of you, this is designed and intended to turn you increasingly into business owners rather than employees, right? The more you're functioning down in, the more you're just another employee and you've got a day job. Who wants a day job, right? If you're a business owner and you have all the risk of associated with it, you also need the equal amount of joy associated with it. And so for each of you, that's going to be different. For some of you, it's how many hours you get on the golf course. But I want to stress this really is important. The reason that I care about anybody doing this kind of work is as a CEO business owner, what your real gift to the organization truly is the ability to anticipate what's happening 5 years out. And that doesn't happen when you're in the office dealing with the kind of grind of whatever's gonna happen. That happens when you take walks by the river, when you are reading books, when you are napping and waking up and new ideas are coming. That's when you are having conversations with leaders like this who are beginning to broaden your understanding of what's possible. So that is for sure a big part of what I want for all of you is to continue to experience more and more of that delegation and automation and more of I'm coming into my role that feels really aligned with my sense of purpose.
Excellent.
Cool. So my suggestion is maybe just, I've given Mark really specific homework for you, but maybe for the others, just start reviewing a couple of those early videos in module one and just see how you're doing against some of those. You know, do you have a clearly articulated why? These are some basic underlying stuff. And just to get a feel for that. And then next week, we're going to kick off and talk about change management.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'm excited. Thanks.
So happy to have you guys. And next week, we should have, I'm told, more people, which sometimes adds more value and sometimes depends on who they are that are showing up and what they're bringing. So it'll be really, it's always fun. So I enjoy it. All right.
All right. Thank you guys. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.